My name's April Woodard. I'm on the Cider Days Committee. I'm also a cider maker, and I work in many facets of the cider community and industry at large. I'm going to be moderating the discussion. We're going to ask you to wait, please, until the very end for your questions. So hopefully everybody's good with that.
Episode 155. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincaller, and I am the producer and cider MC at this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. Bringing us into this episode 155 is April Woodard. She was moderating the panel on sexism in the cidery, which was held at the 24th annual Franklin County Cider Days. We'll be coming up to that panel discussion shortly, but first, a bit of news out and about in Ciderville. Is it too early to be speaking about CiderCon? I don't think so. If you don't know what CiderCon is, well, it is the annual conference that is put on by the United States Association of Cider Makers and always takes place in the middle of winter in the Northern Hemisphere. And in our case, in the U.S., this is typically around the end of January or beginning of February. So get out your calendar right now, pull over in your car, wherever you may be, and write this down, because although this is a trade industry conference, it is open to cider enthusiasts. And I want to really encourage both commercial makers, people in the trade, and enthusiasts, who I actually saw quite a few at last year in Baltimore, attending. It's so worthwhile. And here are the dates. It begins on Tuesday, February 5th, and runs to Friday. So that whole week, you could land in Chicago and have a blast of time, because it's also Chicago Cider Week is happening at the same time. And then stay through the weekend for the Chicago Cider Summit. I am going to be there, and I'm going to be spending between now and all the way up to CiderCon convincing you. I hope I don't have to convince you. Really, do I? Let me rephrase that. I am going to be spending all this time just kind of sharing the love of that experience, because I think there's so much to be gained about meeting up and kind of doing like a mind meld with all these folks that are just super stoked about cider. It's a fun time, and I'm also going to be putting out a podcast. I think it's going to be called Pro Tips for Navigating CiderCon. This will be my fourth CiderCon. It'll be my second in Chicago. And last year I did a little bit with talking about how to maneuver around there. And I'm going to do it again because, well, I like to do that. I do Totally Cider Tours, which is a little branch off of Cider Chat, sharing my passion for showing you around the spots and how to best navigate to make your journey really swell. So that's what we're going to be looking at. So pop that in your little must-listen-to list coming up. If you haven't subscribed to Cider Chat, you should, just for that episode alone. And also coming up, I will have Michelle McGrath on the podcast speaking about CiderCon, but also specifically the United States Association of Cider Makers. So we like to pull her in every once in a while. If you don't know Michelle, you should know her. She's just a force to be reckoned with in all the best ways, because she is such a good spokesperson for cider, a good representative for the industry, and I'm very proud and honored to know her. So we'll be bringing you all that as we roll into December and January. Dang, it's just a little bit of time left, which brings me to my first tip I want to talk about in CiderCon. Right now, even if you're sitting on the fence, which you shouldn't be, make your hotel reservation. It's going to be at the Hilton. It's going to be on the waterfront. Well, it's not right on the waterfront, but, you know, they have that giant lake there, Lake Michigan, and that's where the Hilton, where it takes place, is located. It's a really cool scene. Out front, there's kind of a park, and really accessible. So make your hotel reservations now. If you go to the Cider Association website, you'll be able to see a link there for the Hilton. They have a reduced rate. Do it now. It helps in a lot of ways for the association, because they got like a block of hotel rooms. And the more people that take advantage of that, the better the association is at keeping the costs down. So that's my first tip. Right now, November, make your hotel reservation. You know you could always cancel, but hopefully this will be a little bit of a nudge to make it so. When I come right back, I'm going to be talking a little bit about cider making and some things you should be doing right now if you have something bubbling or post-bubbling in your cellar. Here's a little 25-second tip for you to think about if you are making cider at home. It's time to rack it over. For most of us, if it's gone through primary fermentation, which takes about 2 weeks, then you need to think about what you're going to do next. Are you going to leave it on the lees, where that's all the precipitants that drop out to the bottom? If you're going to do that, then you want to think about how you're going to stir that in for over the course of the next 6 weeks. And your management program between now and bottling time, sometime in 2019. Or for most folks, they're going to rack it off of the lees and put it into a new vessel. If you're going to do that, before you rack it over and take it off of the lees, make sure that you have a clean vessel to put it in and you have some cider to top off, because you're going to have a gap of space now where you take it off of the gross lees on the bottom. So you might end up needing as much as 2 750-ml bottles of cider to top it off with. You have a couple options there. One is you could buy some cider and something that's not going to have a lot of necessarily. I would not recommend doing a fruit cider. Obviously, you don't want to put in like a high-quality cider, a nice orchard-based cider, into your homemade cider at this point, because I'd prefer to drink that. Find something that's going to be a little bit like a common cider. I'll just leave it like that. Have fun hunting that down. Or if you're like me, you saved some cider from last year that you could then use to top off this year's batch. So that's what I'm going to be doing, because I am just working with a barrel this year. I have a 25-gallon oak barrel that I'll be topping off, and I'm doing Sir Lee. I am fermenting that, conditioning that on the lees until I bottle it, maybe next year this time. The other piece is make sure that when you do top it off that you leave minimal amount of airspace. I would say if you could get away with an inch of airspace, do it. Your biggest obstacle to making a quality cider for the home cider maker is too much contact with oxygen. So be very, very careful of that. That is probably, I think, the one key thing that really disappoints folks trying this for the first time. So you're going to rack it over into a new vessel, perhaps, and you're going to top it off, bring that level all the way up to about 1 inch. If you do not have access to cider, the other option is you could get fresh pressed apple juice, and I'd recommend boiling it for a bit to get rid of any yeast that might be going on there, might conflict with what you have in your vessel. Unless you're getting it from the same orchard, then, I just throw it right in there. Who cares? It's going to ferment a little bit, and then it'll be all done. Why not? That's my style. A little bit back 40, but who cares? It's your cider. Have fun. You call it, but just make sure that you don't forget that it's waiting for you and wants a little bit of attention and nurturing to make it a quaffable drink. If you find value in this podcast and you believe in cider going up, then how about becoming a patron of Cider Chat? It's pretty easy to do. You could go to ciderchat.com and find the links on how to do that. Go to the Patreon page and sign up at any level. Shoot, we just had Erica sign up for $1.08. And you might think, oh, that's kind of silly. Well, yeah, it is. But it works, and it really helps someone like me keep on producing a weekly podcast for you. So check it out at ciderchat.com, become a patron, or you can make a one-time donation too. In Ciderville, every sip counts. We've come to that point in the podcast. We're going to now move on to our featured presentation, which is a recording I did at the 24th Annual Franklin County Cider Days. It always takes place the first weekend of November. So this was just a very recent event. It's being moderated by April Woodard. She'll tell you a bit about the goal for the panel and also be introducing all the panelists who came in from primarily the Pacific Northwest and Northern California. So if you're driving down the highway, keep your eyes on your road. If you're riding that bike now, stay steady. But if you can sit back with a glass of cider, make sure it's full. Let's head to Franklin County Cider Days, and we begin with April Woodard.
I want to take one moment to talk about what our mission here is today and what this panel is about. It's to take the larger context from the Me Too movement and bring it specifically into the cider community. Although we can't solve these issues in 1 hour, we can work towards making this a start to coming together to create an egalitarian, inclusive cider community, and hopefully well beyond. We aim to shine a light on these shared issues, and by coming together, share strategies and action items that can be put into use to affect change. All right, and with that, I'm going to welcome our speakers and introduce you to them. On the end, we have Emily Ritchie. She's the executive director of the Northwest Cider Association. Emily was formerly in marketing department of Oregon Department of Agriculture. Her cider venture began 4 years ago. She was running a farm-to-school program when she met the famous Tom Oliver, and I guess that set her on a course for changing her life to a cider life. In her role as the executive director of the Northwest Cider Association, Emily supports cider makers in Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Washington, British Columbia. She helps to reach passionate cider drinkers through marketing, education, policy, and a strict cider competition. Next, we have Pat Niddle. She hails from Humboldt, California, where she owns and operates as the maker, and I think you wear all the hats over there, at Wrangeltown Cider Company. She also owns North Story Wines in Arcata, California. Pat worked for 15 years in Napa and Sonoma County wineries, specializing in the production of Pinot Noir, prior to owning her own company. She's passionate about producing orchard-designated ciders that represent small local farms in Humboldt County. Next, we have Jana Daisy Enzine. She is the co-founder of the Palm Boot Society. She's also the National Cider Ambassador for Finn River Farm and Cidery. She has an extensive many-year background in cider, beer, and wine, both as a broker and as a distributor sales representative. Jana runs a small 4.5-acre farm in Oregon City with a husband and two children. She's also a yoga guru. All right. Last, but certainly not least, the dynamic Ellen Cavalli. She is the owner and co-founder of Tilted Shed Ciderworks in Sonoma County, California. Along with being the sales and marketing director, Ellen is a self-proclaimed cider evangelist and educator on a mission to increase the public's IQ of cider. She's an active and longtime experienced book and magazine editor. Ellen's the esteemed editor and publisher of Malice, a quarterly print zine focused on elevating the consciousness and conversation of cider. She lives on a small farm with co-founder Matt Heath. Scott Heath. I don't know where that came from.
I married someone else off.
Scott, who I know, so that would be embarrassing. Her 11-year-old son, Benny, one dog, six cats, three chickens, three sheep, and too many apple trees to count. And with that, let's welcome our panel. We're going to get started right away. We're going to be beginning with Emily Ritchie on the end. If you do have a glass and they're for purchase in the other room, we'll be doing three tastings of their ciders.
All right, so I'm not a cider maker, so you get maps instead of cider this morning. These are maps of the cider makers and the Northwest Cider Association, so if you are able to come out to the Pacific Northwest, we'd love to show you around. These are great areas for apples and for cider making, so have fun. Come visit us. So, hi. Sexism in the cider industry. I wanted to start kind of in the larger picture of why we're here and why this is an important conversation. This is a conversation about power. We're talking about power and privilege, and we can start with the idea of patriarchy, right? There's a lot of small and subtle pieces to patriarchy. One of them, you know, I Googled what patriarchy means this morning just to double check, but I was like, do I really know what this means? There are pieces of the power dynamic that we don't often even see. You know, subtle things like when a woman marries a man, she's often giving up her last name to take his, and that's giving up her identity for his. It may not be inherently bad, but it's something to recognize that that's sort of an assumed decision. With power, again, it's not inherently bad, but it's something that we need to recognize and have a conversation about. And those who wield the power hopefully wield it in a responsible way. So sexism is deeply entrenched in our society. It's entrenched in the cider industry. And this is a conversation that we were eager to have just to open up that conversation to make people aware of things that they might not see every day. I was trying to think of an example this morning of a sort of easier discussion topic to start with. You know, I'm the first one. And I thought really a lot about children and parents when we think of a power dynamic, right? It's not inherently bad that a parent has power over their kid. But it's important that they wield it responsibly. And it's important that we not only take care of the kid's immediate needs and make sure they don't lose a finger or a limb or die, right? Those are really extreme, but we want them to thrive as well. We want them to be encouraged. We want them to be well-fed and be able to turn into thinking beings themselves. So when we think of patriarchy and we think of sexism, it's more than with the Me Too movement, thinking about women being raped or something really extreme and bad happening to them, there's a lot more subtlety to it than that. And I am not here to just point fingers at, you know, men and patriarchy. I am a white woman, for those on the podcast who can't see that. I also have power over people. You know, if I was born with a different color of my skin, I would be in a different situation. So it's not enough for me to just acknowledge that racism is out there and, you know, be a good Portland hipster and sort of dust off my hands there. Oh, great. I need to keep engaging with this topic. I need to keep learning and thinking about my actions. So that's what we thought we would bring up today. And one of the subtle examples that I have from my personal experience in the cider industry was I was driving with a male colleague from Portland to Seattle. The day looked much like today, gray, rainy. It's about a 3.5-hour drive, so you sit back and you talk. And in the middle of traffic, we got stopped, and my male colleague put his hand on my knee. He's driving. his right hand on my left knee. And in the moment, I thought, surely did he just miss the shifter? Like, what? Like, he just went kind of far. What? And I didn't say anything because I was really surprised. But as I think about it after that, I was being treated more like a sexual object than a colleague in that moment. And if I had been a male colleague, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't have happened. And I'm pretty sure I also would have said something like, what are you doing, dude? You know? But I didn't. And it is still a perplexing thing when I continue to interact with this man. And it makes me wonder when I'm speaking, you know, what else is going through his brain? And it's, I have plenty of examples, and I'm not here to shame my male colleagues. I am not going to call anyone out. But I do want to say that that is one of the more subtle ways that sexism is out there and in the industry. So
I just wanted to ask,
if you had said something, what do you think would have happened? Like, what made you not say something besides the surprise of that moment?
If I hadn't just been surprised, I think it would have been slightly awkward, but I think I could have said something like, dude. You know, one word would have been great, dude. It would have acknowledged the situation. But I don't know.
Because sometimes when we find ourselves in these situations, there's a fear to speak up because of how that might impact you in many ways.
There's often a fear. And in other situations, I've had that where, especially, I have the opportunity, I could walk up to him and have that conversation now, but I feel like I don't want to rock the boat, you know, like as a woman, especially in a leadership position, I don't want to have that conversation. It's awkward. I want to let it go. And again, I don't think he meant any harm by it, you know, but I want to be seen as an equal colleague. I don't want to be seen as a sexual object.
You have 1 minute left.
All right, I'll leave you with a takeaway. Ladies in the room, whether you're in the cider industry or whether you are part of the community that likes to drink our cider, thank you. I really encourage you to step up to positions of leadership. There are 3 women on the board of directors of our association out of the 10, which is a lot better than where it was when I first took my role. There is 1 woman on the board of the United States Association of Cider Makers. And Michelle McGrath would love, the director, would love to see more women on that board. And I love seeing some of the men on that board in this room hearing this. And I want you to know that it is difficult for women to step up and serve on the board. It's also, I see a lot of women doing the work in our industry in the Pacific Northwest. They're on the Cider Week planning teams and whatnot, but they're not necessarily the actual leaders and decision makers. And so this is a call to action to the women in the room. Either if you're in the industry and you can serve on a board, or if you can be the person that champions that person and encourages them. I think that would make a really big difference.
Thank you so much. Perfectly said. Next, we have Pat Niddle from Wrangeltown Cidery, and we're going to be pouring her cider in the back. So if you do have a glass, you get to have a taste.
This cider's Fieldbrook Nursery Orchard, a local orchard in my community.
Are there some glasses for the panelists?
Yes, would one of you bring glasses up for panelists, please?
The name of the cidery is Wrangeltown Cider Company. Wrangeltown. Thanks, Al. Arcata, California, northern California, about an hour and a half from the Oregon border. Microphones.
Can you just give us 10 seconds of cider geek knowledge about this cider?
So this is a retired ag teacher from a local high school who planted this orchard. He has about 115 varieties of apples, and I get about 12 to 15 of those. I'm getting his number 2s that don't make it to the farmer's market. I don't get the picture perfect ones. They're the little guys and blemishes and scab, and that makes just fine cider. So these are mostly culinary varieties, and with the odd Yarlington Mill or crow egg or something, you know, that he has tucked away that I'm fortunate to get. So back up to year 2000, after being bouncing around, not knowing what I wanted to do when I grew up, I landed in the wine industry, first in a tasting room, then to a laboratory where my first harvest was in 2000. During that harvest, I was just so enthused and happy to be there, and I ran into the cellar master who said he would never hire a woman because women weren't capable of that physical labor that is involved in doing that. And yeah, right.
show them your hands.
Yeah. So I worked in the laboratory and then moved on to another large corporate winery where I worked in the lab for 3 years and became lab manager. I could see that at that time in the industry, that's where a lot of women, where things stopped for them. They didn't get into production. They were pushed into, they were left there with nothing further. My boss at that time was far more qualified than the two winemakers who worked over her. So the writing was on the wall, and I decided to go to New Zealand for two harvests and get in 2002 and 2003 to get cellar experience. Took a big pay cut, came to another winery, and worked as a cellar hand where by the end of harvest I was promoted to enologist and then assistant winemaker for 3 years. I ended up in a custom crush, and there were 30 to 35 wineries that, over the course of 8 years in Santa Rosa, California. I was one of three women winemakers out of 35 labels that were there. So that is true to the statistic that the 10% are winemakers, or, and I wonder, you know, I imagine it is the same in cider. During that time, I saw many young men promoted, even without an educational background in fermentation, be promoted to assistant winemaker with just two harvests experiences under their belt. It was apparent, especially to me, when I was there bulldogging a barrel and this guy who just got a promotion after two harvests with 20,000 more a year asked me what that was, that tool was. What are you doing with that? What is that bulldog? I'm like, oh, wow. Continued to carry on. I worked for six different labels. I was the winemaker for Mira Vineyards, which was a small boutique Pinot Noir producer with vineyards from the Central Coast to Mendocino County. And then I assisted on six other small boutique Pinot Noir projects. While I was working there and assisting on one of those projects in the cellar and doing a pump over at a tank, there was a very lauded Pinot Noir producer who was in that facility, very cocky guy, walked up to me while I was exhausted, doing my best, and said to two other cellar hands, you know, Pat really likes it, insert really graphic description of a sex toy with that. I felt cut off at the knees. You know, this guy had, and it is about power, Emily, he had the power to either encourage me to stand by me, but he chose to use it to do that. And then the three of them laughed, and I could see the other guys just laughing along because they wanted to be his buddy. Again, that thing in the last few months we've heard about the laughter. Mm-hmm. He had a choice, and so it was extremely disappointing to see that. I am encouraged by the youth of the cider industry as a whole that we can change this now. We have an opportunity because the patriarchy is really established in the wine industry, and I hope that, as Emily said, call to action, you know, jump in, become leaders, speak out, support your people in this, whoever they are. That's it.
Especially for me.
Here, I have some cider.
Have a drink.
Yeah, you deserve it.
So next we have Jana Daisy Enzyme from representing Finn River.
Hi.
And we have cider as well from Finn River, some beautiful cider.
Yeah, fantastic. I think that'll come around as well. So
maybe you could just spend a couple seconds.
Happy to. Hi, I'm Jana. I'm out from the West Coast, so happy to be here. Thank you so much to April for putting this together. Thank you to Franklin County Cider Days for the opportunity to speak and to dedicate this time. It truly is heartening. It's wonderful to see your faces here this morning, and it's truly an opportunity where we have a moment in time to have dialogue, to open up discourse, to take a look at our community, both in the microcosm of the cider world and the larger community. I think cider is coming around. We'd love for you to pour it, right? Yeah, here we go.
Yes.
I've got some beautiful 750 milliliter bottles of Golden Russet coming around. Finn River Farm and Cidery, where I work for, is in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. We're a working organic family farm. So when the cider comes around, it's going to be a blend of russeted apples. I hope you'll enjoy that. It's something fantastic. I am not a maker. I am a sales representative, and I do national sales, so I've got about 12 states and a couple Canadian provinces that I manage. And I've done sales in the world of cider for about 5.5 years now for Finn River specifically, and prior to that, I've worked in wine, I've worked in beer, I've sold cider when nobody wanted to buy cider. We have one, we're good, you know, and mead. You know, the mead makers tell me every 1,000 years it comes around. So, you know, they're waiting for their time. So right now it's cider's time. I came from a long background working in a number of different fields. I definitely relate to Pat with regard to the wine industry. And, you know, I worked in beer for a long time, which also feels like a pretty heavily male-dominated field. And it's been an amazing journey. I've learned so much, and I came in really kind of young and eager, much like Pat, to, you know, want to prove myself. I wanted to be knowledgeable. You know, I remember buying a bunch of slacks because I was selling wine, and I was like, what do? You dress up, right? And you just, you know, you read, and you taste, and you visit people, and you try to get the knowledge so that you can be respected. You want people to trust your palate. You want to be knowledgeable. And so you do a lot of hustling and a lot of work for that. And to the most part, it's been really fantastic. Having said that, my story is definitely not unique. I have so many individual instances, like some of the ones that Emily and Pat have already shared, where, you know, the assumption that I'm not the knowledgeable person in the room is the baseline, right? We're going to look to your driver who's delivering the wine and ask him the question. Really? But it's true. And kind of a specific nuance with regard to that I feel like is especially salient and is specifically really true to the story of being a woman in the industry is I have 2 children. And I worked through both of my pregnancies. I worked in the alcohol industry. I hustled cases. I moved kegs. I did tastings. I was out making new accounts. And it's a really interesting journey. You can't hide that. You know, you can put away things in your pocket. You can put part of yourself away and say, you know, I'm going to put on those slacks and I'm going to dress up and, you know, I'm going to go prove it, right? You can get away with some of that. But you cannot do that with the physical form when you're going through your pregnancy, right? I remember distinctly I had a particular new bottle shop account that opened up and I thought, oh, this is going to be an awesome account for me. Really fantastic curated list. And I said, I want to be on this list. Ground floor, I'm going to get in there. I contacted the buyer. Hey, I've got this awesome portfolio. Let me tell you the things I've got in my book. All right, this sounds really great. Fantastic. Let's set up a meeting. So I've got the meeting on the books. You know, it's a weekday. It's rainy, Pacific Northwest, what is new? Come in with my big, hefty bag filled with samples. I've got my portfolio. I've done my homework. I know in and out all of the products that are in my bag. And I walk in, imagine their surprise to see this 8-month pregnant woman waddling in with her big bag of samples. I cannot tell you the look of every single person in the place, the buyer, the staff, they couldn't hide their faces. They didn't expect it to be me. They expected someone different. And this was an instance in which we sat down, we ended up having a conversation, ended up making some sales. But you can't hide some elements of who you are. And I think that the dialogue that we're engaging in now is about transparency. It's about making the invisible visible. So any of us who are working mothers may also know that there's many, many layers to our life, right? You might be dedicated, you might be fantastic at your job, and there's this whole other job that you do all of the time, right? You don't forget all of the nuances, you don't forget all of the small details. That all happens behind the scenes too. But it's almost invisible, right? It just happens seamlessly. I tell my husband, who works in the beer industry, you know, that we have to work twice as hard, right? We have to not only do our jobs, but we also have to do the invisible job. And then there's this, you know, expectation to show up and physically, you know, present yourself in a certain way in our society. I left running my own company 5.5 years ago to join the cider industry full force, 2 feet in, because of the same thing that you have heard already, because it was new and exciting. The cider revival? Yes, please. I want in on that. I want to be in on the ground floor of creating something that is more balanced, that has a fresh new perspective, that sees men and women and all people in a new light, which is holistic, that we can be our true selves and that we can support each other and that we can give each other the support that we need to grow a wider, a deeper, a better understanding of what it means to bring what we love so much, the orchard, the fruit, the cider profiles, into our daily lives in a way that doesn't have to be disbalanced with power. It doesn't have to be something that is othered. We can really actually bring ourselves, our full selves, and our knowledge base and be treated respectfully for who we are. In that work, back in 2015, a few other Pacific Northwest colleagues and myself felt like we had heard from so many women colleagues that there was a need for more. There was a need for some organization. We share these stories, you know, over ciders after the end of the day, and there's so many of them. These are not unique. You know, my story is not unique. Pat's story is not unique. Emily's story is not unique. They're unique to us and important in that way, but every one of you has stories, I am sure. And we felt like there was definitely a need to do more organizing, to bring people together in a really meaningful way. And I had a lot of association with some fantastic women in Pink Boot Society, which is an organization for women in beer. It's built to help support women in the beer industry, in an industry that's been historically dominated by males. And we sat and scratched our heads, and then we sat down with their executive director and said, how do we do something like this in cider? And out of, you know, tireless volunteer hours over the last many years, Palm Boot Society, P-O-M-M-E, Apple, got the pun, okay. Staying with me here, right? Sorry. Was sort of initially born, and I'm seeing Caitlin. Hi, Caitlin. She's one of our also fantastic, tireless second-tier founding members, and we've been doing just a lot of great work, and there's many of you who've contributed to that in a meaningful way, and we're really working hard right now to bring that organization up to the next level so that there's infrastructure and support for women that has a mission of supporting women with educational opportunities, with networking, and CiderCon in Chicago in 2019 will be a place where we get to host the first annual meeting. So definitely, I encourage you heartily, if you work in the cider industry and you're a woman, please join us on the Facebook group now, please talk to me after, and then definitely please stay engaged and join us at CiderCon 2019. My call to action is around making the invisible visible, around opening up dialogue, and around being an ally, being supportive. There's so many of us who've seen instances happen that we know shouldn't have happened, and we didn't say anything. Maybe it happened to us, maybe it happened to someone else. Every single one of us can take a small step. We can work towards positivity. We can work towards open and honest communication. And every single instance in which we do that, it makes a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Jana.
Cheers.
Cheers. So I would like to welcome Ellen Cavalli to be our next speaker, and she has also donated some cider today.
Yep.
Yeah, good morning, good morning. Let's have breakfast cider. Let's have some top. Right? Like, I wasn't just drinking 3 hours ago anyway. Wow, Cider Days. This is what happens when I leave home and I'm not, like, having the mom all the time. It's awesome. So I'm pouring, I think they're going to be pouring. I brought top work? Yeah. Okay. I'm on this, guys. We can do it together. Okay, so Top Work is a cuvee. It's from the 2016-2017 harvest. It's a blend of organic, dry-farmed Gravenstein, Nihu, and Transcendent Crabapple from our farm. Knock yourselves out. Pairs well with, I don't know, cider donuts? That's what I'm looking for. I was promised cider donuts this morning, April.
I did hook you
yesterday,
up.
But today is a different day. I don't know. You're going to have to edit this out on all your videos and audio. Just work with me. Good morning. I'm Ellen. I don't have a plan for today. I never have a plan. But first I want to say, look at this audience. Like, this is super cool, all right? So I'm trying to do a head count here, and it's pretty even 50-50 split of men and women, all right? And I'm not trying to make gender binary decisions here, just my guess, okay? And what I don't know, though, is, like, how many of you are in the industry or in hospitality or just, like, cider enthusiasts? So I thought it'd be kind of cool to just, for my own data collection, because I'm compulsive that way, is by a show of hands of people who are, how about if you're in the cider industry, you're actively like making or selling or growing for cider, can you raise your hands? All right. That's some people. I don't know. I didn't count you. But that's just some people. Okay, so that's a quarter. A quarter. Darlene?
Not even.
Let's add this up. And then next, how many of you are in the hospitality industry? So you're a restaurant or store buyer or something like that who interfaces with cider and cider purchasing? Oh, you're hesitant to even admit it. All right. Because you don't want me coming up to you afterwards and be like, you want to have my cider? That's not what I'm scoping. I'm not trying to do that. Okay. So a small fraction. And so is it safe to assume, by show of hands, that the rest of you are just cider enthusiasts or interested in it? Wow! That's like beyond enthusiasm. And this morning, you can muster that. You're hired. Okay, great. So I really appreciate you guys being here. And, you know, we're talking about, like, the nitty-gritty of what happens behind the scenes and, you know, the tension that there can be between women and men, and it exists. And so I want to also be able to talk to you in those terms about, as cider enthusiasts, as cider drinkers, what sorts of things you may see as well that sort of are emblematic that there is some sexism, that there is some problematic relationships between how men treat women. And that's what we're really talking about here, okay? And we have to admit that. And so I guess to backtrack really quickly.
How's my clock?
Backtrack really quickly on my clock.
Great. Carry on.
Yes. I guess what I'll do is I'll talk a little bit about the part of the industry, and then we will work into part where you as the cider drinker and the cider consumer, which I hate that word, where you may see some things and you may be able to help us out, meaning help us women and help the cider industry become more egalitarian, because we can do that. It's within our grasp. So really briefly, I do this. I'm not going to talk so much about my experiences right now, because what I did, I did this little zine called Malice. And this is not a plug for Malice, but maybe a tiny one. But I do this zine and It's a super nerdy cider zine. It's print quarterly, super geeky. This goes back to my beginning as a zine editor back in the mid-90s, okay? So I'm just going back to my roots. I'm sick of this all the time and people commenting on Twitter. I'm just done with it. Like, let's have some real dialogue. Let's dig in, and we're going to talk about things that might be super nerdy. Like, let's talk about wild apples. It's awesome to me. Or in this case, what I was doing is I started a completely different article for this issue, which is the fall issue. And then the Kavanaugh hearings came on. And we were talking about this panel. And it gutted so many women I know. It gutted all of us. Because what it was doing was re-traumatizing. Every single person in this audience, every single woman you're looking at right now, every single one, I do this when I'm walking through the market, and I go, every single woman has been groped, has been done worse, has been kept down because of their gender, has been, you know, looked over for that promotion, has been denied equal pay, has been called horrible things, and that's all right, while the men around them look at it and go, ah, just boys being boys, and walk on. We've all been there. And so I felt like I had a responsibility to cover that for this my little zine. So I switched gears, and what I did is I reached out to women in our industry, and I said, you can be anonymous, I don't even have to publish it. Tell me what is going on in your life. Because here are the good things about cider, both, and this represents it too. We're pretty much as cider drinkers, what you see in this audience is true, 50-50 women and men. That's great. What other industry, what other alcohol beverage category can say that? I don't think any, okay? Certainly not beer, certainly not spirits. So we have a really good base. And we have really great representation, actually, in the cider industry. So we have more women working in the industry. So I said, all right, there's a lot of good things about our industry. We have better representation. There's better representation both on the producer and the consumption side. Great, great start. What are some of the problems, though? And so women reached out to me, and they told me about unwanted sexual advances. They told me about people touching them, men touching them, their colleagues touching them, that they shouldn't be doing that. They told me about, you know, comments, this toxic bro mentality, especially after events or when the guys have been drinking a lot. One woman told me, you know, she had to stop distributing her ciders through, because cider's often treated as beer, and she stopped having her ciders distributed by the only distributors available are these beer distributors, just because of the comments she was getting all the time. She owns a cider company, just terrible comments, unwanted advances, and this just I don't want to go into detail because I said it, I wouldn't, but, you know, just really ugly stuff, more in line with what Pat's talking about, and so she stopped going through that, and she had to limit her business because of that. Is a man ever going to experience that? No. So we do have these things that maybe it's not so overt. There's a lot, but it's every day. It's every day you have people, like in my case, real quickly, a compliance guy. You know, he was late giving me reports. I said, dude, where are my reports? He gave me the wrong reports. Now I'm delinquent. He's like, oh, don't you lash out at me. I'm not kidding, lash out. He's like, I don't like your tone. You have a bad attitude. I don't know if I can work with you anymore, and you're not fun to work with. I'm not having fun with you anymore. And I was like, dude, if my name were Alan Cavalli, you sure as hell wouldn't say that to me. And that's true. And we have, you know, innumerable things. So it's almost constant, and sometimes it seems really subtle, but it's there, and it does have negative impacts on how we do our business. So in one case, someone's just like, she limits her distribution because of it. Or another one, you know, doesn't want to be in that industry. So those are things that I'm pretty mindful about. And then as far as consumers, I was, you know, kind of checking in on that too. And there's some sexist marketing that maybe you don't think twice about. And, you know, I was on Instagram, there's a cidery, they had a woman in a little bikini, very buxom, and it was part of a contest, and it's like, show us your cans. Like, take photos of our products and show us our cans. It's still up there. And women, I mean, all these women were commenting like, wow, that's like really offensive. You just are objectifying this woman to sell, you're using boobs to sell your cider. Like, that's not what cider is supposed to be about. And they went on and on and on this post. And the guys, I guess, who's running it, I don't know, said, no, this is how we honor a strong, independent woman. That's not how you do it. And so my recommendation in those situations, and I've seen some other sexist marketing, where it's very much objectifying and sexualizing the woman to sell a product. We see it happening all the time. But how does that make my cider taste any better? You know, it doesn't. So my call to action on the consumer end, which it seems like there's more of you, is you see it, you say something, you object to it, and you're like, okay, fine, I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to boycott. And so I want to, we take that power, right? So in the industry, we need to take our steps to ensure a more egalitarian, you know, more equity, more equality. And then on your end, as a consumer, you know what I mean? Have really high expectations. Buy your ciders for more women-owned cider companies. Ask those companies, you know, if you see a bunch of dudes there working, hey, what are your, you know, do any women work here? Why not, like, turn it up a little bit? Why not put that pressure on there? You see some sexist marketing or some can design or something like that that has women's boobs? You just file off an email to those people and just, like, that's totally the wrong tone, totally trespasses a lot of what's in good taste, and I'm not buying your product because of that. Push back on that. I mean, that's what we need to do. It's fine to talk about it. You know, if someone says some stupid remark to you, I call them out right then and there. I don't care who's in the room. If we just do it, if we just say enough, maybe things can change. We don't have to let it get as toxic as these other cultures. You know? Because we have a good start right now. We're 50-50 right now out here in this audience. And if every woman and every man makes everyone accountable for each other, then we have a really great future. You know, we can really be a really egalitarian, beautiful community. And we have to have high expectations for each other, hold each other accountable for it, and be unafraid. And that's what I said.
Thank you. Absolutely brilliant. Well said. I think probably besides casting your vote, your dollar and your behavior in society is really what can make change. It's what you do, not what you say, that really matters. Go cast your vote appropriately. Spend your money where it will do the most good. And support women who bring amazing talents, intelligence, and their whole being to cider in a way that is very unique. And so to make a place for them to express themselves and embrace that.
Wow. And even listening to it a second time, it kind of hits me as a double whammy. So much to really applaud these courageous women for being on a panel, on a stage, in front of a room full of people and sharing their stories. Big bravo to them. And I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to their stories and calls to action today. I believe it's really important that we keep on practicing this conversation. We're not always going to get it right, and so we can't beat ourselves up about that. We just do our best. It's kind of like an apple orchard. It takes a whole lot of apples to make one orchard, and it takes a lot of work, patience, and practice to create that perfect blend to put into the bottle. We just do our best. And we keep on keeping on. You might think it's just about people, but in the end, the fruits of our labor is all about helping keep cider going up. This is Rhea Wincoller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up, going up.
Yeehaw!